Warren Sapp joins us on Sports Byline USA. If you're looking for a good read, I hope you'll check out this book. It's an autobiography, and when I tell you who it's about, obviously Warren Sapp, it's called Sapp Attack. You know, Warren, when somebody writes an autobiography, they have to go and look inside their life and what it was like and everything. As you reflected and did that, what did you come up with that maybe you didn't know about yourself before you wrote this book?
No, let me stop you there. I really didn't write an autobiography. I really wasn't going to do a step-by-step, you know, prying and crawling on myself from, you know, because there's some points of me that I don't even like to look at anymore. So I did it in more of my story, funny, you know, revealing. I did it more like that because I wanted you to laugh and laugh with me sometimes, because I just did some crazy things at times, and I tried to rational it out and put it to you in a simple form. You know how I am. I just shoot it to you straight, and it's not autobiography in the least bit.
It says in the introduction on the information that was given me, the best word to describe NFL legend Warren Sapp is big. Big body, big talent, big career, big personality, big mouth, big heart, big problems, big opinions, big hits, big headlines, and big plays. Do you disagree with any of that?
Nope. Nope, not in the least bit. It has been big for a long time. It's something I cannot hide. I'm a space eater, and it's big usually when I do it, no matter what.
Let's go back to Apopka, Florida. Describe it for me.
It was Plymouth, Florida, but now it's Apopka because they just made it all one. The indoor foliage at the capital of the world is getting bigger as we know it. But my town was about, it was quarters, blacktops, and across the streets. So we're talking about 250 maybe people. I can tell you every person that lived in that house, kids, parents, everybody, and the people that lived there before them. That's how close-knit of a town we was. It was that small. It was just an old country boy town. I mean, I lived on a dirt road, and now bears my name, and it's half dirt and half faith.
Your mom didn't want you to play football at first, did she?
Well, it wasn't that she didn't want me to. You know, my older brothers, I'm the baby of six, so my older brothers were all running backs. So they'd come home, broke up, and I was a baby. So, you know, the last one she wants to protect. I don't know why she was thinking that, but that's what she was thinking.
I know it says in the book, Warren, I've played the game on every level possible. I played on the Dust Bowl. I've been proud blue darter for Apopka High School. I played on the biggest stage in sports. And inside me, there is still a little kid who is ready to get my four friends, and you go and get your four friends, and we'll meet in the park till the sun goes down, or at least until I hear my mother calling.
That's how it goes, boss. You know, hey, listen, when mom calls, you got to go. Listen, I got to go, fellas. As my mama calls, I got to go. But until then, we're going to play until somebody's about to get their eye put out with the ball thrown at them, because you just can't see it. But other than that, we're going to keep score. We used to end game 77-84 all the time. I mean, it was just how we played. I mean, you get two country boys in a wide-open field and a ball that's blowed up, and we'll play all day long. That's how I am. That's how I've always been. I'm just a big kid. I tell people all the time, I'm a safety. And you know that's 200 pounds, trapped in a 300-pound body. I think I'm the littlest, sweetest guy walking around. But until I bump into something, like, oh, I'm really that big.
How did you end up at the University of Miami?
My mother. My mother went there, and Dr. Anna Price was an academic advisor. And she had convinced my mother there's no way that I was not coming home without a college education. And my mother said, I like that Dr. Price lady. And I say, if I can just get home without telling her about the Rolex and the South Beach and all the other stuff that I saw, because you know Coral Gables is away from Miami.
Yeah.
And my mother was like, you ain't got no car, so you can't go nowhere. I'm like, somebody around here have a car. I just needed to get her to where she was like, okay, and I signed to Miami. I don't know how I convinced her, but she let me go.
I was just going to say, a country boy, and you said
listen,
country boy.
I'm telling you, it's 284 miles from my mother's, from our backyard. That's how many times I've driven from my backyard to the University of Miami. It's 284 miles from the campus to my mother's backyard. And trust me, I remember it like a T. I don't know how. Dr. Price is wonderful. I kiss Dr. Price every time I see her now. She's just wonderful. She got me out of a little small town, went to Miami, and I haven't been home since.
What was the first eye-opening event when you hit Miami?
First eye-opening event?
Yeah. Now, what was the first thing? I mean, you're a country boy. You already said it. But when you get to the big city of Miami, what was the first thing that you went, whoa?
Nah, I was in Coral Gables. That was the whole point. We was in Gables. The one thing that made me go, whoa, I went over to Rohan Marley's house. I had never seen a two-story house where people live upstairs. I'd never seen a two-story house. I'm like, that's a two-story house, dude. They live upstairs. There's people upstairs. There's like a little bridge inside the house, you know. Mm-hmm. Rohan, people have money. So he had a 325 BMW convertible. Oh, we was living the life, Raleigh. We was living the life of Raleigh as kids.
Now, you went there to the University of Miami initially to be a tight end, did you not?
I was 225 pounds when I was leaving high school. I told you I was just a safety trapped in a 300-pound body. That's all.
And how did the assistant coaches talk you into being a defensive lineman?
Give this a try, because there's no 300-pound tight ends in the league. I say Eric Green. He told me he's digging his grave with a fork. So I went down and gave it a shot, and I walked into the Gritters room, and they showed me Jim Burke's picture. They showed me Tim Hendricks, Russell Maryland, Cortez Kennedy. It's like, son, you're in the line of all these great ones. And I'm like, huh? It's like, we know what we're looking at. Trust us. I said, okay. Ain't like they throwing to the tight end anyway down here. I said, why not? Let's give it a shot.
Warren, I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that your engine always goes 100 miles an hour. And when you were down in Miami, you certainly were that way. And that's why you won all the national awards and everything. But what is it that fuels the Warren Sapp football engine?
I want to chase down the greats. Tony Dungy walked into my life in 1996, and I had heard all the stories from Neil Smith, from Derek Thomas, God bless his soul, and Johnny Randle, because I was down in New Orleans at the Super Bowl in New Orleans. And I remember the one the Patriots played the Packers, back-to-back one, 96. I remember that year so vividly, and I was down there with Johnny doing the big man lineman challenge. And when the word came down that we got Dungy, Johnny Randle looked at me, and I remember him looking at me like, what? He got who? And I said, what? What are you talking about? Man, you just signed Tony Dungy as your coach. And I said, what does that mean? He's like, look like I'm about to be the second best defensive tackle in the game. I said, why you say that? He's like, he's going to show you the way. And I remember him saying that to me, and I'm like, what? So when I actually got to the man, what he put in front of me was Joe Green's resume, 10 straight Pro Bowls, 2 defensive players of the year, and 4 world championships. So that's what I had in front of me I wanted to chase.
You were drafted in the first round, but you were expected to go in the top 5, but because of the testing positive for marijuana, you dropped down.
You really believe that? I mean, as you say that, and you recall back almost 20 years, do you remember it was they wanted to throw cocaine on it every time?
Right.
And then I got the lead to come out and say I had no cocaine in my system. And then the 11th hour, Chris Mortensen comes out at 11:30 for a 12 noon draft and says it again. I played at the University of Miami in the great magic city of Miami. How in the hell could I have passed and flunked 7 drug tests and nobody knew it? I was the best player in college football. How could we hide that at Miami? Because it just didn't make sense. And they fired the security department behind it. I mean, Jackson and his boys had to be fired from the NFL security department.
I remember.
That's the only reason I didn't sue.
Warren, you were drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but what did you think of their uniforms when you saw them?
Listen, you have to understand, my brother was a diehard. I mean, my baby brother, the one closest to me, was a diehard Buck fan. I'm talking about Jimmy Child, Batman, all that. All that. I'm like, are you James Wilder? I'm like, are you kidding me? Ugh. And I remember waiting on him to get off that bus from the 1979 championship. It was a monsoon and they lost to the Rams, but I couldn't wait to tell him that his Bucks had lost. And I remember him when I put that hat on, and I was so distraught at that moment. I'm like, Tampa? And I looked over and he's standing there and he has the biggest smile on his face. And I looked at him, I say, I'm going to hate those colors, but we're going to make it work. I know we're going to make it work. I know we're going to make it work. Bucko Bruce had the earring in the wrong ear. It was everything that was wrong. It was everything that was wrong. Trust me. But it was 80 miles from home, and that made it so right.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about Tony Dungy, certainly a fine gentleman. And you once said, I'd take a bullet for Tony Dungy, but I wouldn't take a paper cut for Sam Wyche. What was the issue there?
Sam wanted to run a 3-ring circus, and it was just that simple. He wanted to run a 3-ring circus and be in control of a 3-ring circus. And I didn't feel like I was in the circus. I didn't want any part of the circus. I wanted a structure to a football organization that was going to lend to winning. And before that, we had 11 straight double-digit loss seasons. So when you've lost that much, and then you come out gangbusters and go 5-2, as Sam liked to say, and then all the shenanigans and the hootenannies and the you can't cater breakfast. And he did so many things behind the scenes that most would consider petty, But to football guys, it's the essence and it's what we are because we're creatures of habit. And once you change our habits and change how we travel and change how we dress and eat and different stuff that Sam did, it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare.
Warren Sapp has joined us on Sports Byline. I want you to check out the book. It's called Sapp Attack. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. We continue across the country and around the world with you on America's Sports Talk Show.